Four new provincial police commissioners have been appointed as the South African police force embarks on a big reset. With me is former Western Cape provincial commissioner, Dr. Lenard Max. Welcome, Doctor.
My pleasure.
Doctor, four new appointments. Lieutenant General Arthur Peter Adams in Northwest, Lieutenant General Jan Skiepers in Limpopo, Lieutenant General Sisakele Dianti in the Western Cape, and Lieutenant General Apapea Modise in Mpumalanga. Are these merit appointments?
Yeah, you can remember the last time then when we spoke. I raised a concern, which is very serious to me, with regards to our Rainbow Nation approach and that we can't leave certain race groups behind. Because at the time, all nine provincial commissioners were African. There were not a single colored, white, or Indian among them, as well as the National Commissioner's Office, with his deputies, as well as his divisional commissioners. This time around, I'm very pleased that the acting National Commissioner, in her wisdom, decided that there's merit among people of colors as well as whites, and to take this country along as a team, to allow each and every race group, there's no Indian there, but to contribute to crime fighting in this country to make our country more safer. So yes, in terms of the information which I gathered from the media, it appears to me that these provincial commissioners are seasoned police officers. For instance, Lieutenant General Sizakele Dianji in the Western Cape, he got 34 years of service. Lieutenant General Arthur Adams, Northwest, 34 years of service as well. Lieutenant General Jan Skiepers Limpopo, 38 years of service. And Lieutenant General Apapea Modise of Mpumalanga, she got 37 years of service. So that is, for me, pleasing that they are seasoned. They are not people who are, parachuted into those ranks. And I'm quite certain that they know and understand our communities needs, and they will make use of the opportunity to ensure that the resources are distributed to the areas needed most. And I also hope, because there is a new phenomena in the police, that provincial commissioners nowadays acted as foot soldiers on a daily basis and leading operations instead of empowering their deputies to do the job so that they can focus on the broader policing needs like human resource, the buildings, because we experience regularly that there's not proper and sufficient resources for the people who are conducting these operations. And a provincial commissioner is a strategic manager and not a foot soldier. He or she can often assist and be present, but they must empower their deputies to execute those duties. Otherwise, how are they going to measure and evaluate the cooperation and the productivity of their deputy provincial commissioners?
The appointments come at a time of shocking testimony at the Matlanga Commission of Rot reaching into the top of law enforcement power. What do you make of the latest allegations and testimony?
You understand, it is, heartbreaking for me as a former operational police officer still holding the rank of Lieutenant General ceremoniously. And associate myself with men and women in blue, those who are credible, those who are honest and loyal to the country and its constitution. It is a disgrace that we have seen actually nowadays the stories which came out during this Madlanga Commission, how certain police officers, you know, are in cahoots with criminal minds for their own benefit. And is not focused on service delivery to the country. However, some of these allegations are also questionable with regards to the arrest made by IDEC, the Independent Directorate Investigating Corruption. Having noted, you know, the serious allegations against the head of IDEC, Advocate Andrea Johnson, that is absolutely unexcusable. And there needs to be taken action. Because if you arrest somebody, it is an adverse infringement of that person's human rights. And especially in this case, where those arrested are police officers who are empowered and to serve the country, and they were actually then arrested on allegations of rogue charges. You know, when Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi made these allegations that IDEC got a rogue group and an honest group. You know, I could not believe it that such situation would exist in IDEC. But the latest testimony before the Madlanga Commission exonerates Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi. And, you know, and that is damaging not only for Andrea Johnson, but to IDEC as a whole, the NPA, but most importantly, to government. Because government put these systems in place to ensure that they address, you know, the corruption in this country. And we as citizens got hope that government is doing the right thing to put these systems in place and also to appoint people they believe got, you know, the necessary skill and commitment to serve our country without fear. And it is totally unacceptable, and I think there must be consequences to that effect.
Do you think the new reset agenda of the South African police force will go far enough?
Let me say, you know, you must have a plan. And my late father always said, my son, you can't get up in the morning and walk outside, get outside, and then look at which direction the wind is blowing, and then decide for the day what you are going to do. He said, when you open your eyes, you must have one. Maybe it might not be a good one, you know? So, yes, to fight crime, you must have a plan. And we have seen a lot of plans. Myself, as provincial commissioner, I also had a plan. But those plans are not cast in iron because crime evolved. Criminals, they are experimenting with new methods in to overcome your plans and your strategies. So it is work in progress, I think. And I'm glad that the minister, the acting minister, I think at this stage I can say confidently that unless proven otherwise in future, that he is determined to change the culture in the South African Police Service and to reset also the focus of the South African Police Service on what matters most. And that is the safety and security of our people in this country. However, you know, the plan, we had several plans in this country, but crime is, especially gang violence, continue to be a problem, a serious one. And my concern is, although we've got all these plans, if gangsterism of gangsters don't fear consequences, then that is serious in addressing criminality in our country, especially gang violence. Because the more serious the crime, the more and higher the, you know, the acknowledgement of the gang member within the ranks. And they don't fear jail time. I recently and often also watch what is happening in El Salvador, where they arrested gangsters with tattoos, which associate them with a particular gang group, and detain them. It is an adverse, you know, infringement of human rights. But we have to ask in this country, what is more adverse and what is more important? Is the right of the gangsters more important than the right of innocent lives? The Constitutional Court in this country, in the case of State versus Makwanyane, you know, made it plain that the most important right is the right to life as well as the right to dignity. And the reason for that is, and that is the argument, if you are not alive, you are not in a position to enjoy the other rights as enshrined in the Constitution. So, you know, I believe this morning I heard on DSTV 404 SABC that about 170 people were killed in the Western Cape in 2 weeks. Now, that is more serious than the war in Ukraine and Russia. So, you know, something needs to be done. We cannot say we have got plans. And even the army has been deployed in the Western Cape. And there were expectations that the army's presence will contribute to a reduction of crime. That did not happen. And, you know, some people may not agree with me in the past when those plans were announced, when I said I don't see any difference with the army's deployment, and it has been proven there were no, and currently there is no difference in gangsterism, especially Western Cape, Gauteng, and as well as Port Elizabeth, where gangsterism is infested in our respective communities.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes. Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Doctor, your autobiography is being launched this month. It is titled A Life That Refused to Bow. Please share some of the highlights with our viewers.
Yes, thanks for mentioning this. Yes, A Life That Refused to Bow is, you know, is my biography, and it got certain sections. The first is actually how I grew up in the rural areas of Klipdale, Bradasdorp, Gowans Bay, and so on, as a child. And then when my mother died when I was 9 years old, my brother and I, my late brother Johnny and I, we had to look after ourselves, you know. My father was working away during the week, and the two of us were staying at a house in Eilandskraal Valley, near Gowans Bay. And we have to look after ourselves. We need bread and bake it on the stove, and, you know, whilst other children enjoying their nice slices of bread with butter and peanut butter and cheese, the two of us got this dough, you know, which we actually shared between ourselves and eaten and put it down with water at the tank at school. From there, we move around various places, very nomadic life which we experience. Because my father was a draft spanner and a jack of all trades, painting farmhouses and stuff. We stayed in shacks as well as dilapidated houses on farms. He was not an ordinary farm worker, and we stayed in those houses which the farmers didn't use for their workers, because our stay was temporary, as long as the draft span job was ongoing. They stayed there, and when it's finished, we have to move to another farm. So from the five children, I was the five sons. We were 13. We are only, with my sisters, 13 together. We are only three left, of which I am the eldest now, and my two sisters. And that is part of the book. And the other part is, I had to leave school with a standard 6, grade 8 school certificate in the first quarter of 1977, as in standard 7, grade 9 today. I had to leave school because my father could not afford to pay my boarding and lodging. And whenever my landlady actually gave us food, when she gave my food, she would tell me, "Listen here, your father must pay me." So I couldn't take it anymore, because my father didn't have a permanent job. You know, he'd only span draad, as they call it, whenever this job is available. And I could not actually put that burden any longer on him. And I left school and I joined him to erect fences on the farms. Move around, do paint jobs on farms, build some farm sheds and so on. I assisted him, and I was only 15 years old. And of course, as a result of this, and we did also ordinary farm work, but whenever it was raining in winter, then the ground was too wet to erect wire, you know, fences, to plant poles and so on. And I said to him, "Listen, I have to look for a job where I can pay as well when it rains." He said to me, "Okay, that's fine, but you will also work as it rains." So I joined the railways as a laborer in Botrefi in 1979. At the age of, I was still 17 years old. And so I worked there as a laborer. We replaced sleepers and, you know, built the railway lines. It was excruciating work. It was hard labor, you know, to remove sleepers underneath. Two persons, myself and my buddy, we had to replace 15 wooden sleepers with cement sleepers. Those years, they were not machines, you know, replace it like today. Not at all. We had to do it by hand. And the team I worked with was about more than 100 guys. And we work, as they call it, stukwerk. When you finish with your 15 sleepers, you are finished for the day. So it was hard labor. Then I got this break and I decided I cannot pension along the railway lines. And an opportunity came when I joined the then railway police. I joined the railway police, and I always had this desire to become a police officer. And then I joined. As I said, my mother were already late. I had to actually carve out my for my path. And when I found my path in life, I had to cut it open. So I stayed in that railway camp in a kampong, you know, in Bord River, until this opportunity arrived. But while I was staying there, I had two dreams. The one is that one night I stayed with my late brother in his hut, and I had a dream that I was walking in the field and among flowers, and all of a sudden a sunflower raised, and a voice said to me, "I want you to shine like that flower." And I woke. And I thought my brother was talking to me, but they were fast asleep. And that dream stayed with me as long as I'm alive since then. And then after that, I went to, there was an opening at the other kompong, not kompong, but a hut. I went in to a friend, which I actually grew up with, and the two of us were staying in that hut. And while I was in that hut, I had a dream that I'm at the police college, and I had a black shorts, white tackies, and a white vest on, and we are doing, PT, and so on. And I woke also, and I found myself on this steel bed, and this wooden structure, and I could not believe, because it was so real, as if I was at the college. But I left it there, and I joined the police, and in 1981, when I stood on the parade ground, a year later, on the parade ground, in this black pants, a shorty, as well as white tackies and white vest, I couldn't understand it. It was so surprised. And I look at myself, and I said to myself, this is exactly how I saw me a year ago. So there was really a purpose for me. And at that time, I was busy, writing exams and improving my studies through the then Success College. I had this desire that, I want to become a better person. I want to make a contribution to our country. But my late father, he had wishes that Johnny, my late brother, the one just older than me, and I must have better jobs than the other three brothers. And he wanted us to get a proper education. But unfortunately, Johnny dropped out at standard 4, grade 6. And I finished now grade 8 and started working as a laborer, which actually disappointed him very much. But as a result of our financial situation, I could not actually proceed. And whilst I was at high school, standard 6, grade 8, and one holiday, I was with them assisting with this draught spun, the fence, the erection of fencing. And we were sleeping in one of those dilapidated houses on a farm. And I went to ask my father something in the one room. And then I saw him on his knees praying to God and said, I said, God, if it is your will, please, my other sons did not achieve the goals which I actually wanted them to achieve. But this last one, if it is your will, be with him and assist him to achieve the goals and my wishes. I turned around. I didn't ask him. I was so shocked. I turned around and I walked back to my brothers and the other guys who actually worked with my father. And I continued talking to them, and we slept. And I kept that all the way, with me, that he prayed for it. The day when I went home and I told him, listen, I have to report at the railway police headquarters to be sworn in. He was so proud of it. And when I became a sergeant, I went down in uniform. And my father was born in 1901. He didn't have education. He was illiterate. And then I showed him my stripes. He could not talk that at that time because he had about 3 or 4 strokes. And his voice totally disappeared. And, he touched those stripes with a smile and nodded his head. And he was so satisfied with my progress. And he said one day, whilst we were staying on the farm, and Saturday afternoon, the two of us were sitting because there were no other children of my age around which I could play with. And he was my mate, And he would tell me about the war he was in 1942 and all these terrible things at war. And he said to me, one day that you guys will take command over white people. Now, at that time, I grew up, I was born into apartheid, and I grew up with the system as is. And I thought, my father is now really getting old, you know. How is it possible? Because the structure looked so permanent. How is it possible that that could happen? And, you know, and when I actually progressed in my ranks and in the police, and the new dispensation actually arrived in 1994, and it happened that we could take command over white people. I sat as provincial commissioner in my conference room. I sat there with my stars on my shoulders and my swords. And I look at the panel or the guys in front of me, my other fellow commissioners and brigadiers. And I said to myself, if he was still alive and could see that what he told me, his predictions came true. And yes, but I must also say that whilst in apartheid, as I work actually at the railways in Bodrum, I had to request my immediate supervisor and the inspector for a testimonial letters. And let me tell you, those two white people, you know, they wrote testimonial letters in favor of me, and they mentioned there that as far as they know me, I'm not smoking, I'm not drinking, strong wines or anything. And they know for a fact that I will go far in my career. And, you know, those testimonial letters, everything is in my book. And those two white people in the apartheid system did not see a colored boy of, 18 years old. They saw somebody, a leader for the future. And what they did was, actually, they invested in my future by giving me that testimonial letters. So everything was not bad. And not all white people were bad. And that I can attest to. And that is what I appreciate. And when I became a person to decide on the future of all races in the police where I chaired, I did not allow a situation where a particular race group were left behind. I had a situation where Celebi at the time told us that we have to not replace, but to transform the police. At that time, most senior positions were actually occupied by white Afrikaners. And we had to bring in people of color into those positions. We could not simply chase away white people. And they created additional positions. That's why the police at this moment are heavy on the budget or salaries because of those additional positions. And he said that we were not supposed to put white people on. And I put one. I've got an instance where I had 18 vacancies and I put one person on. And Celebi had promotion board discussions. He took me on. Why I put that white person on? It's against his instruction. And they wanted me to appoint somebody else from AMK. Because Celebi was an ANC deployee, and I had about 3 ANC deployees under my command, and they wanted to promote that person from a captain to a full colonel. And I said, no, that white guy is my recommendation. He deserves it, and I'm not going to compromise on that. So there, Celebi's and my relationship started to sour. And at the later stage there, I recommended a colonel for a brigadier post in Pau. He's late now. His name was Leon Grobler. And Celebi actually promoted a black person in his place and did not promote him. And he went on arbitration. And in the during the arbitration, he mentioned to the arbitrator that he've got only one witness, and that is Commissioner Leonard Max. And my legal advisor actually asked for an adjournment. And he came to me, very surprisingly, and he asked me, but Commissioner, is it true what Grobba said, that he is going to use you to testify on his behalf? I said, yes. He said to me, but listen, do you realize that you are going to testify against your boss? I said, of course. I'm totally aware. I said, but what is fair is fair. I cannot leave, any race group behind. We must work together. And that is what I told Celebe. We cannot say that we want to work and take hands and to build the better South Africa than an apartheid one if we leave behind certain race groups. You know, when Fivers took over the police, there was Fivers white, there was other white bester, a white general. It was Manuel colored, Levisa as African, and Chetty as an Indian. All of us in the police saw there's a future for all of us, not for a particular race group. If you perform, then on merit, you can achieve those things. And that is exactly what I wanted during my term of a provincial commissioner, to let each and every race group believe there's a future for them in the South African Police Service. And I had the opportunity, although I was, you know, very much embarrassed by certain white police officers and mistreated, I could easily take revenge and did that, you know, and abuse my power to do the same to them. But I believe that, hatred and revenge break down and does not build. And I want to build. And for that reason, you will see on Facebook and everywhere how people talk of me, you know, and say this was the best provincial commissioner they ever worked with. So it's about my fairness. It was not about your race. If I say no to a colored person, that no will be for white, black, whatever, in whatever gender you are. And so, so I did not have a clique. I was there for everybody, and I was everyone's provincial commissioner.
Thank you. That is a very, very touching and inspirational story, Dr. Leonard Max. Speaking to BizNews, I'm Christine. Thank you, Doctor.
May Yakin.
Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox, sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.